All right, a good tavach, everyone. Let's begin. So, it's funny. I turned on my phone after Shabbos, and the Torah Anytime clip that went out was actually from one of my Shalom Bayis shiurim, and actually something I was going to start with tonight. So I'm hoping that most of you hold Rabbeinu Tam, so you haven't seen it yet, and we could chazer. But if not, we'll go in a little bit of a different direction as well. I want to begin. The truth is, I realize I've started each of my talks over the course of this weekend with kind of creating definition and expectation. So when we speak about Shalom Bayis, so it's exceptionally important to go ahead and define our terms. So sometimes when it comes to Shalom Bayis, we often think, if I were to ask you, the definition of Shalom Bayis is? It's a very dangerous question to answer. But the definition of Shalom Bayis? Mamish, no one, okay. So normally we assume Shalom Bayis means marital peace. And the truth is, most times people will translate Shalom Bayis as the absence of conflict. But the truth is, that is not the definition of Shalom Bayis. And the truth is, we already know that from the Torah. Chumash Bereishis is filled with multiple stories. The Torah is not a storybook, right? The Torah ultimately is a book of laws. And when the Torah teaches us stories, those stories are only there to convey to us moral, ethical, or life lessons. So the Torah tells us a dramatic story in the beginning of Bereishis. V'atomer Avram, Garesh ha'amah hazos v'es bino. Remember again, give you the context. Sori Imenu was barren for many years. Avram, at her best, goes ahead and marries Hagar. They have a son, Yishmael. Yishmael is not continuing in the Abrahamic tradition, not continuing down the family. So Sori Imenu says, again, Yitzchak is born, and Sarah says, you have to go ahead, you have to kick them out. You have to kick out Hagar and Yishmael. And what does the Torah Kedosha say? The Torah says, Vayera hadavar ma'od be'ene Avram. What's Avraham Avinu's response? This is Sarah. So what's Avraham Avinu's response to Sarah Avinu's request? See, interestingly enough, what's Avraham Avinu's response? You don't have to be scared. Now, everyone could answer a Shalom Bayis. It's not going to get you in trouble. What's his response? He doesn't respond. Interestingly enough, he doesn't say anything. Right? It's Vayira Hadavar Ma'od Be'enov. He's very upset. He's visibly perturbed. So what? Again, so let's follow the story through. Sori Imenu says, get rid of Yishmael and Hagar. Avraham Avinu is very perturbed. So what is Avraham Avinu about to do? What is he about to do? Nothing. What has to happen? Who intervenes in this little bit of marital stalemate? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kol asher tomar eilecha Sarah, shma bikola. So you see something absolutely amazing. Avram and Sarah had conflict. Avram and Sarah had disagreements. And in fact, it would appear that had HaKadosh Baruch Hu not intervened, it could be that Avraham Avinu would have dug in his heels and said, no, remember again, this is not a topic for a tenet, but it's for Avraham Avinu, the notion of sending away Yishmael was horrific. Avraham Avinu's entire essence, his entire avodi in this world, was to introduce humanity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to show people the path. And he can't even do it with his own son. Avraham Avinu felt it was such a colossal failure. So Sarah says, you have to get rid of him. Avram doesn't say anything, but it appears that he's not ready to take action. And so ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes, tells him, you have to listen to Sarah. Marital conflict. Another example. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav, kitzayid befiv, v'rivka heves es Yaakov. Remember again, Yitzchak and Rivka. They have favorites, which is a whole other discussion, right? They have favorites. Rivka Imenu favors Yaakov. Yitzchak Avinu favors Esau for whatever the reasons. But again, husband and wife do not see eye to eye. Remember again, the greatest example of Yitzchak and Rivka not seeing eye to eye is what? Greatest example? Do you know that there's something, you know the story with Rivka Imenu, right? So again, she tells Yaakov to dress up as Esav to go ahead and get the brachas. What's missing from that whole story? What's missing from that entire story of Yaakov and Esav and telling Yaakov to dress up like Esav to get the brachas from Yitzchak? What's missing? A dialogue. Rav Sham Shnufal Hirsch has a whole piece about this where he explains that Yitzchak and Rivka either weren't communicating or perhaps weren't communicating well. Rav Hirsch actually posits that Rivka tried to tell Yitzchak over and over and over that Esav is not who you think he is. But Yitzchak Avinu, in such a desire to see only the goodness in his child, would not accept the words of his wife. Conflict. Yitzchak thinks that his future is with Esav. Rivka knows that the future is with Yaakov, they're locked in conflict. Next case. Vaytere Rachel kilo yolbul Yaakov. Rachel Imenu sees that she has not given birth. So what happens? Vatekani Rachel ba'achosa. Vatomer al Yaakov havali banim ve'im ayin mesa anochi. And perhaps one of the most heart-wrenching psukim in the Torah. Rivka reaches out to her husband and she says to Yaakov, Rachel reaches out to her husband Yaakov and she says, give me children, and if not, it's as if I'm dead. Such a heart-rending pasuk. And what's Yaakov Avinu's response? Vayichar af Yaakov b'Rachel vayomer, hatachas Elokim anochi. So Chazal take Yaakov Avinu to task for this response. But the response is a sharp one. Am I God? Am I God? Am I the one responsible for your infertility? Am I the one responsible for your barrenness? I have children. So whatever's happening, again, this is you. This is about you. What does it have to do with me? I haven't held anything back from you. So Chazal take Yaakov Avinu to task for speaking this way to his wife. But again, what do you see? You see conflict. So you see Avram and Sarah, there's conflict. Yitzchak and Rivka, there's conflict. Yaakov and Rachel, there's conflict. Is there conflict between Yaakov and Leah? So there's probably a lot of unspoken conflict with Yaakov and Leah. Remember again, Yaakov never wanted to marry Leah. And Leah knew that she was not the woman that Yaakov Avinu wanted to build a life with. Why do I point all of this out to you? Because it's very important when we create our understanding of Shalom Bayis. If your goal for your Shalom Bayis is to have a marriage that is free from conflict, if you figure that out, first of all, you should be giving the class. That's number one. And number two, please tell me the secret. Right? Because at the end of the day, there is no such thing as a relationship which is free from conflict. For one simple reason. Anytime you have two human beings building a relationship together, you're going to see human beings are dramatically different. Wherever you have two people under one roof, then ultimately there's going to be conflict. So if Shalom Bayis doesn't mean the absence of conflict, and this is very important, I'll tell you why. I've mentioned this story a number of times in different talks that I've given. I'll never forget, going back a couple of years ago, there was a chassan and kala from my shul. I was the Masada Kiddushin, had a long-standing relationship with them, and the kala called me up about 2 days after they got married. She said, Silver, we have to come meet with you immediately. It's very serious. So I said, of course, tell me what happened. And, you know, I could tell she was holding back tears, but already as she began to say, like she just started sobbing. And I couldn't understand what she was saying. So I said, you know, compose yourself, just tell me what happened. Of course, we'll meet. And finally she got it out and she said, we had a fight. I said, okay, right? And what happened? We had a fight. I said, and? Like, I'm expecting, and he left, and I left, and my parents told me I made a mistake. We had a fight. So they come into my office, and they had a fight about, like, the most ridiculous thing. It was just whatever. Most fights are. The most ridiculous thing. But what was incredible to me was that this young Kala's expectation of marriage is that it's conflict-free. How could it be that during Sheva Brachas, we had a fight? Now, I'm not going to take a show of hands as to how many people had disagreements with their spouses during Sheva Brachas. And I'm purposely avoiding eye contact with my wife as I go ahead and say this. Right? Meaning, so it was, to me, this was amazing. And I said, like, I'm curious, like, I wanted to understand, you're coming into marriage with a fundamentally skewed and potentially dangerous hashkafa. Because if your hashkafa, if your outlook on marriage is that real blissful marriage, real shalom bayis means the absence of conflict, ay vavoy, you're never going to be happy. It's never going to work. Because if every single time there's a fight, there's a disagreement, you think that's indicative that you are locked in a dysfunctional marriage, and you think that the sky is falling, then you're never really going to be able to get the necessary traction to build a meaningful life together. So shalom bayis, yes. Oh, it's...
But that these examples, like you're saying, of conflict, maybe, I know it's an example of Shalom Bayis.
No. I'm pointing out that it's an example of conflict. It's conflict. It's conflict in a context of okay. You could tie into that. That's not pshuto shel mikra. Pshuto shel mikra. Again. Remember, why does the Torah tell us a story? I understand what you're asking. I'm not disparaging. I'm showing that the Torah tells us that conflict exists in marriage. Not that there's something wrong with the shalom bias of the avos. No, you said that. I didn't say that. I'm showing that the Torah is showing you that conflict exists in the context of marriage. You can't argue with that because that's the psukim. You want to argue what Chazal are trying to teach us from it? Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Right. That's exactly what I'm saying. Right. We're on the same team. I'm not suggesting that conflict means absence of shalom bayis. That's exactly my point. I'm saying people often think that shalom bayis means the absence of conflict. And I am positing that shalom bayis always includes conflict. Because conflict is part of every single relationship, including the avos and the mos. So now, if true shalom bayis is not the absence of conflict, but even real shalom bayis has conflict with it, so then what is shalom bayis? So the truth is, there's not one answer to this. And I think it's also very important that people have very different types of relationships. I think sometimes when we speak about marriage and we speak about shalom bayis, we create a construct. Here is what shalom bayis looks like. But the truth is, each marriage is different for one simple reason. People look for different things out of relationships. Some people want security. Some people want to feel loved. Some people want companionship. Some people just don't want to be alone. People have different things that they want out of marriage. So I'm not in any way suggesting that there is one definition of shalom bayis or even one approach to shalom bayis. But I'll share with you a couple of insights. I think on a most basic level, the essence of shalom bayis, what is shalom bayis and how do you know if you and your spouse have shalom bayis? If both of you feel fulfilled in the relationship. If the relationship is one that is fulfilling for you, then by definition, that is shalom bayis. Will there be disagreements? Will there be fights? Will there be machlokes? Of course, because as we saw, that's part and parcel of human relationships. But perhaps we can work with a definition that true shalom bayis is when a husband and a wife find a sense of meaning and fulfillment in their relationship. This marriage gives me something significant. Now that something significant, as I mentioned before, could be different for all of us. Remember again, we're not going to get into this, but Sigmund Freud wasn't the first one to discover that our relationships with our parents frame and forge every subsequent relationship. Chazal already spoke about that much earlier on. A lot of conceptions we have about marriage, sometimes what marriage should be and what marriage shouldn't be, sometimes comes from our parents. We all come into marriage ultimately, again, with different ideas and different outlooks and different preconceived notions. So that fulfillment, what fulfillment means in a marriage, will be different for each of us. But perhaps we'll work with this definition that true shalom bayis is when you feel that your marriage is something meaningful and fulfilling for you. So if we use that definition, we'll spend our remaining time together to speak about how do you create a sense of meaning and fulfillment in a relationship. So I'll share with you a couple of ideas. First, one of the major pitfalls. You know, the Torah Kedosha, when it tells us about the creation of man, we alluded to this in the afternoon share. The pasuk says by Ben Azai, "Vayomer Elokim na'asa Adam b'tzalmenu kidmuseinu." Right? The most incredible thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says when he creates us is he says, "Let us make man in our image." Man is a tzelem Elokim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us in his image. Now, whatever exactly that means is not really material for our purposes now. But understand, because each of us has a nitzutz, has a spark of the Ribono Shel Olam inside of us, that means we too have many divine attributes and traits. And this often comes up in the context of marriage. How so? Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us in His image, sometimes in marriage, there is an incredible Yetzer Hara to forge your spouse in your image. I'm going to tell you, either verbally or behaviorally, the way you need to be. My wife and I are involved in a lot of different shidduchim, my wife much more than I, and I always marvel about young people when they come with a whole list of things that they need in a prospective spouse. I need this, and this. I'm like, wow, I've been married for almost 25 years, and I haven't thought about half of that stuff. It's incredible. And yet here, you're back from seminary for 3 days, and mamish, it's incredible. You know, you have the whole list. So sometimes we don't realize this, that we try to make a spouse in our image. Instead of trying to figure out, now, of course, when you're looking for someone to marry, of course, you have to know what you're looking for, big adol. But I will tell you, and this is not a shir on the shidduch situation or matzav, but there is no question that one of the greatest disservices we do is creating such precision matchmaking. This idea that someone has to fit me to the T in order to be able to be my Ezer Kenegdo, I don't know that that was what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in mind, but we'll save that for next year. In any event, so sometimes we have this yitzhara, we have this desire to make our spouse in our own image instead of really trying to figure out who and what they are. You know, there's an incredible book titled The Gift of Therapy, written by Dr. Irving David Yalom. He's an 87-year-old American, he's an existential psychiatrist. And a professor emeritus at Stanford University. So in this book, The Gift of Therapy, which is an incredible, he wrote it for therapists, to kind of as a guide for giving proper therapy. See, he tells an amazing story that I want to share with you. He says, decades ago, I saw a patient with breast cancer who had throughout adolescence been locked in a long, bitter struggle with her naysaying father. Yearning for some form of reconciliation for a new, fresh beginning to their relationship, she looked forward to her father's driving her to college, a time when she would be alone with him for several hours. But the long anticipated trip proved a disaster. Her father behaved true to form by grousing at length about the ugly garbage littered creek by the side of the road. She, on the other hand, saw no litter whatsoever in the beautiful, rustic, unspoiled stream. She could find no way to respond to her father, and eventually, lapsing into silence, they spent the remainder of the trip looking away from each other. Many years later, she made the same trip alone and was astounded to note that there were two streams, one on each side of the road. This time I was the driver, she said sadly, and the stream I saw through my window on the driver's side was just as ugly and polluted as my father had described it. But by the time she had learned to look out her father's window, it was too late. Her father was dead and buried. So Dr. Yalom goes on, he says, look out the other's window. Try to see the world as the other sees it. The woman who told me this story died a short time later, and I regret that I cannot tell her how useful her story has been over the years to me, my students, and many patients. And he ends off with one last paragraph. A happy life is one in which I can accept that me and my spouse look at the world from two distinct windows and thus see two different things. I cannot hope or expect that my spouse will start seeing the world through my window. What we must strive for is to respect the fact that other people see the world through other windows and try to listen and empathize with what they are seeing and experiencing, even if it is not what I am seeing and experiencing. And I found this to be such a dramatic lesson. To learn to look out the other's window. We see things in life through our prism, through our eyes. And our prism is made up of a whole variety of things. It's our past life circumstances. It's our failures. It's our successes. It's our upbringing. It's where we're holding in life in that very moment. That's how we take in information. That's how we see the world. But our window, my window, is unique and different than anyone else's window. No one else has my window. No one else sees the world. No one else sees things the way I see it. And that is true for each and every one of us. How many times does conflict, well, I'll avoid conflict. How many times do challenges and difficulties come up in marriage because one spouse is so upset that the other doesn't understand them? This happens often, and understandably so. This happens often. I'm not going to say which gender it happens with more often. We'll leave that. So I can't believe he doesn't understand me. Or I can't believe she doesn't understand me. Or I can't believe he did this or she did that. Sometimes what is common sense and what is second nature to you may not be so for your spouse. And that's not because they don't love you. You know, sometimes it happens in a marriage where, let's say again, a wife was expecting something from her husband, and the husband, for whatever the reason, didn't deliver on that expectation. And a wife, understandably so, will feel let down, abandoned, unloved. But maybe it's just that your husband didn't get it. Maybe he just doesn't have the same expectations that you have. Maybe his form of relationship, the window that he sees the relationship through, is fundamentally different than the window you see through. It doesn't mean he loves you any less. It doesn't mean he's any less committed. You're just looking out of different windows. How many times does it happen? You know, people think that like the metric of a beautiful and meaningful relationship is when my spouse knows what I want, and I don't even have to say it. Please introduce me to that person. If anyone's married to that person, I would love them to become my marriage Rebbe. Right? That's not called successful marriage. That's called mind reading. And most of us are not proficient in that. Never expect someone to know what you want or what you need without articulating it. If you need something, ask for it. Now, the hope is that over the time in marriage, spouses get to understand each other, know each other, and begin to understand each other's rhythms and what makes the other happy. But remember, again, just because something is second nature to you and makes sense to you and appears to be normal and good to you, that's your window. But that's not necessarily the window of your spouse. And as we were driving up, and my wife asked me what I was speaking about during this Shalom Bayis session, because she does not let me speak about Shalom Bayis without first vetting the information. So as I told her about this idea from Dr. Yalom, she reminded me of a great story. There's a story that's told about a young couple that moves into a brand new apartment. And they live in an area where there are a lot of apartment buildings clustered right next to each other. And across the way, there's another family, another couple that's living there. And the wife across the way does the laundry and hangs the laundry outside. It was like a clothesline on the fire escape. And so the new couple that moved in, we'll call her the Kala, wakes up in the morning. She's having her cup of coffee. She sees the neighbor's laundry outside. She says, I don't understand. Why doesn't that woman know how to do laundry? She's hanging out dirty laundry on the clothesline. Happens one morning. Second morning, and it really bothers the Kala. This is her first apartment. She's so excited. But what does she have a view of? She has a view of Ploni's dirty laundry across the way. A few weeks later, she comes, she gets up, she's having her cup of coffee. She looks out her window, and lo and behold, she says, wow, finally, the lady across the way learned how to do laundry. To which the husband says to his Kala, no, my dear wife, I just got up a little bit earlier and cleaned our windows. You see, sometimes we don't realize that we see through dirtied windows. There's a lot of schmutz sometimes on the life windshield. And sometimes throughout life, there are things that obscure our vision and obscure our outlook. We automatically assume that the way we see the world, the way I see the world, I think my vision is right, you think your vision is right. And that's okay when you're an individual. But when you're in a marriage, then you have two people, each who have their own windows. And one of those windows sometimes could be clouded by a lot of life schmutz or other things that is going on. And sometimes people clean their windows, sometimes people don't clean their windows. But how important it is in marriage to try to see out of the window of the other. We spend so much time in our marriages frustrated and upset. Why don't you understand me? Why don't you understand what I need? Instead of saying, one second, I know that you love me. I know that you care about me. We're living in a committed life together. Obviously, you're not understanding something about me. Maybe there's a disconnect in our windows. Maybe you just see the world in one way. I see the world in a different way. You see our marriage in one way. I see our marriage in a different way. You see the kids in one way. I see the kids in a different way. So much marital conflict could be dealt with, just by taking the time to go ahead and see out of the window of the other. This is also part of a much bigger discussion about the need, for spouses to continuously get to know each other. You know, it's interesting. So what happens, especially again in many of our communities, a young man and a young woman go out. So what happens? There's a litany of questions. There's a litany of questions before the shidduch. There's a litany of questions on the date. A whole bunch of questions, right? Because again, which makes sense, before I marry someone, I'm not much like, I want to know. I want to know what your one-year plan is, your five-year plan is, the 10-year plan is. Of course, anyone who's been around long enough to know, one-year plan? I'll take a one-day plan. Right? 10-year plan? Forget about it. But okay, but you know what's amazing? Then we get married and we stop asking questions of each other. How many times in marriage does it happen that the spouse you know them on the level as like when you got married? But we've been married 10 years. We've been married 25 years. In Meretz Hashem, there's children. There's peaks and valleys. There's so many differences. I'm a different person. You're a different person. Couples grow apart all of the time, not because they don't love each other and not because they don't care about each other, but because they stop getting to know each other. Okay, we got married. It's good. Shalom Yisrael. It's fantastic. Our neighbor asked me Shalom Thomas. Everything is beautiful. Fantastic. Right? We got to know each other. What more? We change and we evolve throughout life. And sometimes it happens in marriages where you wake up and a husband says to a wife, I don't even know who you are. And a wife says to a husband, I don't know who you are. And it happens. And it happens often. And again, with people who love each other, are committed to each other, and are committed to their marriage. But we stop taking the time to get to know each other. It's incredibly important. We stop taking the time to get to look out the window of the other, which is why it is so incredibly important. A husband and wife have to have a date night. You have to have a date night. Now, it doesn't have to be an expensive date night. If you go out for dinner, fantastic. But if you don't want to spend the money on going out for dinner or the babysitter or whatever else, you could take a walk. And there's only one rule for the walk. None of your electronic friends could come with you. Right? Now, again, if you have children, you have to take something with you. But be attentive to each other. Ask questions. You know, sometimes the conversations we have with each other are utilitarian. Right? You picking up the kids today? Are you running to the cleaners? Right? Did you pay the mortgage? Right? We have plenty of conversations, but it's about stuff that has to get done. What about, how's your life? My beautiful wife, I'm so happy I have you. You know, when we first got married, you had these dreams. Are those still your dreams? How many of us know the dreams and aspirations of our spouses? The ones that we hold deep in our soul. How many of us really know what the person who we build a life with really wants to be when they grow up? We knew those things when we were sitting in the lobby of the hotel, right? Everyone knew that information, right? I want to be the Gadol Hadar. I want to be the wife of the Gadol Hadar, right? So, you know, we all know those things. But then what happens when we get married and we grow up and life goes on and there's ups and downs? Do I know what my spouse really wants out of life? Do I know what her real dreams and aspirations are? Do I know what my husband's window looks like? Do I know what the stream looks like out of his window? Is he looking at a nice stream? Is he looking at a polluted stream? Have I taken the time to look at his window? So lesson number one for tonight is ultimately, again, if we want to build shalom bayis, we must learn to look outside of the window of the other. I'll give you one other example of this. This is such a beautiful gemara. A gemara above Mesia that says, this is on Daf Nun Tes Mudalef 59a. V'ha'amri inshi, people say, this is so beautiful. Issachar gutza, if your wife is short, gachin v'tilchoshla, bend down and whisper to her. If your wife is short, bend down and whisper to her. What does that mean? Yeah, I know what Chazal. By the way, I always tell people I can save you so much money on therapy. Just learn Gemara. Just learn. It's the hafach ba the kula ba. Chazal had everything. See, you know what they're saying? Sometimes when there's a disconnect with people, I want my spouse, I'm here, you come meet me where I am. And Chazal said, if you want a meaningful marriage, don't wait for your significant other to come to you. You go to them. If your wife is short, so again, if my wife is short, there are two things I can do. If she wants to have an eye-to-eye conversation, so you take a chair, stand up, and we'll look at each other eye-to-eye. That's one way. Or I could bend down towards her and look her in the eye. Chazal said, if you want a meaningful marriage, don't wait for your spouse to come to you. Don't wait for your spouse to engage you where you are. You try to engage your spouse ultimately again where they are. So many times we end up waiting for our significant others to come to us, to engage us. Engage your significant other where he or she is. If they're short, bend down and speak to them there. Take the time to look out their window. Make sure that you continue to get to know your spouse. Don't let your dating end with Hari Atni Kudesha Slipetaba Zokidas Moshe Yisrael. That's not the end of dating. That's just the phase, that's a new beginning of a different phase of dating, a beautiful time of dating, where a chassan and kala, husband and wife, continuously get to know each other until 120. We're always evolving, always changing. So you must always take the time to look out the window of the other. A second lesson, and actually amazing enough, in this week's parasha, the pasuk says, "V'anshe kodesh tiyuni." So you wouldn't think you're okay. You're going to, what does that have to do with shalom bayis? Okay. So the pasuk says that if you go ahead, literally translated, be holy people unto me. Baser basoda trefa. So just to understand what the image is over here. Baser basoda trefa is if I'm a shepherd and I have a flock, and one of my sheep was killed, one of my animals was killed. The Torah says, what do you do with it? You're not allowed to eat it. Obviously, I can't eat the animal because the animal died without shechita, died without proper ritual slaughter. So I can't eat it. So the Torah says, all right, you can't eat the tray for the animal, let's go by another animal. La kelef tashlichun oso. Give it to the dog. Give it to the dog. And the Mefarshim were all bothered by one basic question, which is, what's the ikkar of the pasuk? What is the Torah teaching me? Can't eat a treifa. Say hilchos kashrus. You can't eat an animal that died without or was killed without proper shechita. Why does the Torah have to tell me to give it to the dog? Meaning, I could do whatever I want with that animal. I could give it to the dog if I want to. I could sell it to a Gentile if I want to. I could use it for fuel if I want to. I could do whatever I want. I just can't eat it. But I could do whatever I want. So my friends, listen to this. The Das Zekin Rimali Tulsis says something that is so dramatically amazing. The Pasuk doesn't say, Likhelev Tashlichunoso. Likhelev means what? It's good. I went to yeshiva, so I don't know diktuk. So, but the Das Akinim tells us something amazing. So Likhelev would translate as how? Likhelev means to a dog. Lakhelev means to the dog. To the dog. Who's the dog? Listen to this. The Das Akinim says, if you have a flock of sheep, everyone knows, what do you have if you have a flock of sheep? You have a sheepdog. What's the job of the sheepdog? To guard the flock against predatory animals. That no predatory animal should come and be able to attack the sheep. If I have a sheep that died that was killed by a predatory animal, who didn't do their job? Who didn't do their job? The sheepdog. So the Torah tells us, so who should you give the carcass of the animal to? Who should you give the trefa to? Give it to the sheepdog. What? The sheepdog failed. The sheepdog fell asleep on the job. The sheepdog didn't do what it was supposed to do. And now I should reward the sheepdog by giving it the carcass. It should have a good lunch because it failed. Says the Das Akinim, something absolutely amazing. In that moment when the sheepdog failed you, remember all of the times that he guarded the flock. In that moment when he failed, remember all of the times that he fought off the other predatory animals. Remember all the scars and all of the wounds. Remember all the time that he was a trusted companion to you and to the flock. In that moment of failure, remember all of the times he came through. And the Das Akinim is teaching us such an incredible lesson. If this is true with my relationship to my sheepdog, then Allah has come of a come in our marriage. You know what happens sometimes in marriage? Is that when something goes wrong, when something goes wrong, very often all of the marital attentiveness goes to that one wrong thing. Something happens. A spouse does something wrong, big or small. And everything becomes about that transgression. Everything. I can't believe you did this. I can't believe you said this. I can't believe you behaved this way or you didn't behave this way. I can't believe. The Dasikinim tells us, if you want to have successful relationships, you must contextualize moments of marital failure. What do I mean by that? If there's one thing, this is going to sound a little bit like a dismal statement, but if there's one thing that you could expect in every single human relationship, especially marriage, it's that what? Your spouse is going to let you down. I know this doesn't sound right for a Shalom Bayashi, right? If there's one thing you could count on, it's that your spouse will let you down. You say such a thing like that? It's very simple. People make mistakes. So by definition, unless you happen to be the one person who married the perfect spouse, at some point in time, they're going to make a mistake. And that mistake is going to hurt you. That mistake is going to cause you pain. How much pain or how little pain depends ultimately on the severity of the mistake. But it's an expectation in marriage. The people who I love the most will always hurt me, will always let me down. I don't mean even intentionally, not necessarily intentionally, but because you're human beings. So what do you do in those moments where your spouse hurts you? Where your spouse maybe even betrays certain elements of the relationship. What do you do? So says the Das HaKeinim, in that moment when they failed you, don't allow the failure to overtake the totality of your marital vision. Remember all the good times. Remember all of the successes. Remember all the beautiful moments. Remember all of the things that work, even in the midst of crisis. So many times when couples encounter crisis, there's an inability for them to get over the hump. There's an inability for them to kind of soldier on because this failure becomes the totality of their relationship together. So the Torah Kedosha tells us, "Lakelev tashlichu noso." When the sheep dog fails. Now, I want to be clear, by the way, sometimes failures are so severe that you can't continue the relationship. Meaning, I don't know what happens to the sheepdog after this. Maybe he goes into early retirement. I don't know, the Lavdavki, he continues as the sheepdog. But one thing is clear. In those moments of failure, remember all of the times that he so dutifully served you. And in marriage, in those moments of failure, don't forget about all of the good. You know, if a person ever goes to marriage therapy, one of the first things that therapists often do in working with couples is they establish a baseline of happiness. Right now, you're upset. Do you remember when things were good? And it's an incredible chokhmah. It's this Das HaKeinim. To do why? Because when we're in the midst of conflict, it looks like the sky is falling and everything is terrible. And I've blotted out all of the other good things that have been part of this marriage. So sometimes in order to be able to work through issues in a marriage, a person has to realize it's not all doom and gloom. There might have been things that are difficult, might have been things that were terrible. But at the end, hopefully, there were many things that were good as well. Don't forget those things, even in the midst of difficulty and crisis. Next lesson. There's an incredible sefer that is titled Yoatzei Shalom. So Yoatzei Shalom was written by Rav Shragi Neuberger, who's one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. And he gives a Chaburah on Shalom Bayis, and recently he put the Chaburahs together into a sefer. And it's a small sefer, but absolutely incredible. See, in it, he writes, he advances in a fascinating idea. He quotes the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, and the Mishnah says, Ezo gibor hakovesh es yitzro. We know, familiar with the Mishnah, who is one who is strong, one who is able to rein in his yetzer. I don't know if that is a good word for, we often translate yetzer as inclination, right? One who reins in his inclination, but it could also be predisposition, proclivity, something that sometimes is innate to you. So who is one who is strong? One who is able to rein in his yetzer. And Rabbi Neuberger points out something amazing. He says, I'm going to quote you. He says, Madua lo amrinon hakovesh es yetzer hara. Why does the Mishnah make a seemingly open-ended statement? Ezehu gibor hakovesh es yitzro. Who is strong? One who is able to rein in his yetzer. Why didn't you say, who is strong? One who is able to rein in his or her yetzer hara. Right? Isn't that after all we're talking about over here? A person is able to overcome their innermost, the most powerful yetzer hara. That's a person who's strong. And he says something amazing. Va'pirush bazeh. Shelechol echad ve'echad yeshnam dvarim miyuchadim. She me'akvin osam me'la'alos beruchnius. Vilios ben Aliyah. Every single one of us has things that hold us back. We spoke about this in last year's convention. All of us have things that hold us back. For some of us, it's negative character traits. For some of us, it's trauma. For some of us, it's unrealized or unmaterialized dreams. We all have things which hold us back in life. That's called your Yetzer. That's called your Yetzer. Doesn't might necessarily be a Yetzer Hara, but those are the things that sit on my neshama and prevent me from self-actualizing, prevent me from becoming the person that I am truly capable of becoming. And we all have it. We all have it. For some of us, it's a fear of failure. For some of us, it's a fear of success. For some of us, it's an unwillingness to confront the skeletons or the demons in our closets. There's a whole bunch of stuff. But all of us has something, at least one thing in life.
Fears.
Weaknesses. Anything else? Good. Give me a third one. Good. Fears, weakness, correct. Meaning we all have things that ultimately go ahead and hold us back. So the Mishnah's teaching us something amazing. Eizahu gibor. Hakovesh es yitzro. If you want true givura, true strength in life, you have to be brave enough to identify what is holding you back in life. And after you're brave enough to identify what's holding you back, then find the strength to overcome it. And Rabbi Neuberger then goes on, he says, V'chin hu b'nisuin, shekol echad tzarech liros eizu mida, hu ikov hagodol bebinyan habayis. In every relationship, if there's some unfinished business inside of you, that trickles out into your marriage. When we speak about shalom bayis, the most important aspect of shalom bayis, you want good shalom bayis? I think the first step is make sure that you're building the best version of yourself. You could have all of the etzos and all of the skulos and speak to whoever the professionals are. But at the end of the day, a home is a reflection of two people. And if both of those people are actively trying to make the best version of themselves, if they're both working on themselves and identifying that which is broken or that which is deficient or the fears or the various things that are holding me back, if I'm working on that, I will have better shalom bayis. And the truth is, we know this. When you are in a good place in life, your shalom bayis is better. When you have a good day at work, so the truth is, you walk into the house and you're happy to interact and you're happy to talk and you're happy to hear. You have a bad day, and the kids want to start telling you about every single thing, or your spouse wants to start telling you about everything, you mamish can't hear of it. Where you are in life, ultimately, again, is an incredible barometer and reflection of where your shalom bayis is as well. Eizahu gibor, so you want good shalom bayis, and we don't think about it this way. We often think that in order to have good shalom bayis, that's something that my wife and I do together. There are things that we do together, and there are things that we work on together, but there's a very important avoda that is a solitary avoda. If I want good shalom bayis, I must build the best version of me. And the only way I can build the best version of me is to identify the things that are holding me back, to identify the things that are deficient, and to figure out a way to overcome them. How many times do we go through life and we project, right? The truth is, many of us are very skilled at this, where something is not working in life, and I have a whole list of everyone who is at fault for why it's not working. My mother didn't love me enough. My father never played ball with me. The second grade Rebbe spoke to me a little bit too harshly. And this and that. And there's a whole list of people. I can give you the whole list of people who are responsible for my non-actualization. I could give them to you in chronological order, alphabetical order, severity of transgression order. However you want it, I'll give it to you. But you know, there's always something amazing about that list. And that there's always one name that's missing. And who's the one name that's missing? Mine. Mine. Only you are the master of your fate. I'm leaving this, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs everything. I mean your life, the quality of your life, the person you're going to be, the identity you're going to have, and yes, even the marriage you're going to have. There are many people who may have roles in your life. And some people have dominant roles or significant roles. Some are just supporting cast. But at the end of the day, you are the major player. You are the major actor on your stage of life. And what happens and what doesn't happen in your life rests with you and you alone. And if you want real shalom bayis, don't look for your spouse to start doing, but first you start working on yourself. The pathway to shalom bayis is Eizehu Gibor HaKol Veishis Yisro. What's broken inside of me? What's the yitzer? What are the things that I'm struggling with? And a lot of us have been struggling with the same things for many years. And I always speak about it. I'll just say this quickly. You know, to me, it's always remarkable that Elul comes and we identify all the different things that we want to work on. And I don't know about for you, but for me, I often find that it's like the same things. And I say, Elul comes. It's not the pshat that Elul comes. Oh, there's a brand new problem that never happened before. The core things that hold me back have been the same core things for the last 30 years. There's no panim chadoshos balakan. There's nothing new. There's mamish, nothing. Okay, different manifestations. But if I'm honest with myself, it's the same core issues that I've been struggling with for the last number of decades. And an Elul comes and what happens? This is the year. This is the year. This is right, like the Satmar Rebbe says, right? It begins as Hashana, and then ultimately again it's Acher Hashana. Right? So every year begins as the year, and then it's just another year. So what happens? Elul comes, this is the year I'm going to do it. So Yom Norah, incredible. So again, if you're good, you even feel this way towards the end, by Shmini Atzeres. If you're really good, you keep it with you till Chanukah. If you're fantastic, Tu Bishvat. If you're very frum, maybe till Purim. And then what happens? Comes Pesach, everything, right? Everything falls apart. And I'm back right where I am. And I never really get traction in life because I'm not addressing the core issues that are holding me back. Rein in your yetzer, identify the things that are holding you back, fix them, and build your shalom bayis. Two very last quick things. The Gemara Maseches Ksuva springs down one of the brachas of Sheva brachas that we say. Beautiful bracha. Sameach tisamach reyem ahuvim. Literally, again, rejoice, beloved companions. Kisamechacha yitzircha began eden mikedem. Now, the way we translate this as your creator gladdened you, began eden mikedem, in Gan Eden, of yesteryear. Baruch atah Hashem, sameach hasan dekala. Good. So it struck me that under a chuppah, we give a chasan dekala, right? The chashbaruch should make you happy. And who's the example of marital bliss that we give? The example? Adam and Chava. Very interesting choice. Right? Adam and Chava, remember again, their marriage undergoes a significant trauma very early on. Adam blames Chava ultimately for the Eitz Das Tovara. Chazal tell us that after the death of Hevel, Adam and Chava separated for over 130 years. And yet, amazingly enough, this is the paradigm for a perfect marriage. Again, even though we started with the fact that the Avos and the Imos had conflict, Avram and Sarah were a power couple. They represented the most incredible synergistic partnership. Do you know what does Avram Avinu accomplish after Sarah Imenu dies? What does he accomplish? What does he do in the Torah? What does he do? Nothing except find a wife for Yitzchak. Avram Avinu's dynamic activity ends with the death of Sarah Imenu. Right? He finds a wife for Yitzchak to build the next generation. He remarries Keturah, as the parsha says, the end of Chayi Sarah. But that's it. Avram Avinu is always everywhere. Lech Lecha, Mitzrayim, Avimelech. He's all over the place. Sarah Imenu dies, and there's a piece of Avram Avinu that dies along with her. There's a synergistic partnership. They're a power couple, an incredible power couple. And yet we use Adam and Chava. So perhaps there's a different pshat in that bracha. When we say began Eden mikedem, so we often translate it as Gan Eden of yesteryear, kedem like kodem, from beforehand. But I'll tell you something amazing about kedem. The pasuk says vaygarish es haadam vayashke mikedem ligan Eden. Kedem is the place where Adam and Chava were exiled to after they were kicked out of the Garden of Eden. After they're kicked out of Gan Eden, they go to live in Kedem. And maybe the bracha that we're giving to a chasen and kala is something dramatically different. Chasen and kala, life is not only peaks. There are many valleys. Marriage is filled with setbacks and difficulties and challenges. But the greatest bracha to give a chasen and kala is Adam and Chava were the first couple to rebound from life trauma. Adam and Chav encountered a lot of trauma in their lives. There was marital trauma. There was family trauma. But amazingly enough, Adam and Chava kept it together. They kept it together. They had to start over in Kedem, but they did so again. Kisamechacha yetzircha began Eden mikedem. Adam and Chava started in Gan Eden, got kicked out of Gan Eden. They started on a beautiful peak. And then what happened? Life went into a dramatic valley. But they didn't give up. They might have given up for a little bit of time, but then they rebounded. They were mechazik each other, mechazik themselves, and rebuilt a mishpacha. Baruch atah Hashem, misameach chasan v'kala. If you want your marriage to work, you could rebound from almost anything. It's true that there are some things that could destroy the fabric of a marriage beyond repair. That is definitely possible. But 95% of things do not fall into that category. And 95% of things, no matter how overwhelming and hurtful they may be, if you both spouses put their mind to it, you can rebound. If Adam and Chava could do it, then we can do it as well. One last lesson with this, I will conclude. There's a beautiful Gemara Maseches Nedarim. And this will just kind of bring everything together. The beautiful Gemara Maseches Nedarim that discusses the story of Rabbi Akiva. Remember again, Rabbi Akiva did not begin as Rabbi Akiva. He begins as young, ignorant shepherd Akiva. Right? So what happens? The Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva, it's kadashis le barte the kalba savua. So Rabbi Akiva, he falls in love with a young woman who happens to be the daughter of one of the richest men of Yerushalayim. A man by the name of Kalba Savua, right? An interesting name. Kalba Savua, right? The satiated dog. It's not really that much popular anymore. Right? So the Gemara says, of course, that wasn't his name. That wasn't his name. That was a description. The Gemara says he was so wealthy and so generous that even the most, you know, ravenous and famished pauper who would come to his home, if somebody walked into his home like hungry like a dog, he would mamish go ahead and feed them to their content. So young Rachel, the daughter of Kalba Savua, and Rabbi Akiva fall in love. What happens? Rachel announces to her father her intention to marry Akiva. Kalba Savua says, are you out of your mind? We are one of the most prominent mishpachos in Yerushalayim, in Eretz Yisrael. Right? We are the nobility of Klal Yisrael. You cannot marry an ignorant shepherd. You cannot marry an ignorant shepherd. And an amazing testament to Rachel, she sees something in this young man. She ignores her father and she marries Akiva. Kalba Savua is enraged. And cuts his daughter off. Literally cuts her off. To the point that Rachel and Akiva are living in abject poverty. Total poverty. Listen to this scene that the Gemara describes. So what happens? Shama Kalba Savua. Adra hanoa mikol michasei. Azla ve'insa vilei. So Kalba Savua says to Rachel, I promise you, if you marry that guy, you won't get a cent of the family fortune. Rachel doesn't matter to her. She goes and she marries Akiva. Listen to this. Besitva havu gana betivna. During the winter time, so Rachel and Akiva were living. They were living in literally a storehouse, right? Forget about a basement apartment, right? They were living in a storehouse, and the Gemara says they had no furniture, so they slept on a bed of straw. So listen to this, Gemara. Have a kamankit leitivna min mazye. When they would wake up in the morning, the chasan Akiva would pull out the straw from his wife's hair. He would pull out the straw from young Rachel's hair. And he said to her, Amarla, I havoili, I promise one day if I have, ramina leich Yerushalayim didava. Akiva said to his wife, one day, if I have money, I will buy you a Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, the Gemara says, was a golden ornament that the Kalas used to wear. It was like an image of like the skyline of Yerushalayim that the Kalas used to wear at the chuppah. So Akiva says, you know, we didn't have a chuppah like that. We didn't have a marriage like that. We didn't have a wedding like that. He's picking out the straw from his Kalas hair. And I promise you one day, if I make it, I will buy you a Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. So the Gemara then goes on a tangent, discusses a different story. But it always struck me, that Rachel never responds. She doesn't respond. It's not like she says, okay, can't wait. When do you think that'll be? Right? We have like an ETA on that. It's like, is that Amazon Prime? Is it, you know, what do you think? She doesn't say anything. And I've often thought, and again, pure speculation, you could feel free to disagree with it. I've often thought, because what she said with her unspoken words is, you don't understand. I don't need anything else because I have you. I have you, Akiva. I have you. I don't need Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. I won the jackpot. I got what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the greatest gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could give a person. An Ezer Kenegdo. I don't need anything else. You know, sometimes when it comes to marriage, we forget the miracle of marriage. Like the Gemara Maseches Sota says, of Kashal Zav Gun Kekriyas Yamsuf. Right? It's harder to bring two people together like the splitting of the sea. And even though, yes, the Gemara discusses is that Zug Rishon, Zug Sheni, leaving that aside, the Tulsa Shantz there on the side says, Adam Yachid V'isha Yechidah V'hum Zav Gun. What is the statistical probability of finding someone with whom you could spend the rest of your life with? What is the statistical probability of finding someone you could build a mishpacha with? Someone you could love? Someone who you feel understands you? And if you have that, you've struck the jackpot. If you have that, then you have so much more than so many other people in life. When it comes to our Shalom Bayis, we so often forget the gift of marriage. You know, sometimes when you see a chassan and kala, right? And they're all like, you know, there's like the whispering and the googly eyes. And you know, the older married people are like, come on. Right? Come on, you know, cut it out. You know, enough of that already. Right? And then the truth is, it's because there's a part of us that's like, I remember that. I remember that. I don't know what happened to that. But I do remember that as well. And the reason we forget that is because sometimes we forget about the great miracle of marriage. We forget about those moments when we just look into the eyes of our wife or our husband and say, you know what? If I have you, I have everything. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me another human being with whom I could share my life and with whom I could build my life, are things perfect? Things are never perfect. Life is never perfect. The only entity in this universe that is perfect is the Ribono Shel Olam. So unless you're HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by definition, you will be beset by some level of imperfection. But at the end of the day, do we recognize the greatness of marriage? But the Gemara ends. With this, I will conclude. Rachel does say something to Akiva just a few lines later. She says to him, Amrolei, Zil Havi Bei Rav. She says to him, go to yeshiva. Go to yeshiva. Go make something of yourself. Because I saw potential in you, but I do not plan on living out my life with an unlearned, ignorant shepherd. So go to yeshiva and make something of yourself. Or to say it a little bit differently, if you recognize the bracha in marriage, if you recognize, you know, I'll tell you, I deal with a lot of people with a lot of broken hearts. And I will tell you, at the end of the day, often before I come home, I have to compose myself. Because I feel so truly overwhelmed by the tsaras and the brokenheartedness and the loneliness of people. And so I've instituted as a daily practice to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for my wife. For my wife. Doesn't that mean that every day everything is great? I mean, if she's great, every day I'm not great. But to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that miracle of marriage. But when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you a bracha, anytime you have a bracha, divine blessing is never dispensed for free. Divine blessing comes with an expectation. Go do something great. If you're going to get a bracha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no problem, I'm willing to give it to you. I'm giving you the advance. You know what a bracha is? A bracha is like investment capital. It's startup life capital. Here's the bracha. Go accomplish something great. That's what Rachel says to Akiva. I don't need Yerushalayim Shel Zahav because I have you and I love you and we have everything together. But if HaKadosh Baruch Hu has performed this incredible miracle of bringing us together, because Rachel and Akiva, when I tell you that they didn't exactly travel in the same circles, then I guarantee you again, Rachel never received Akiva's resume. That never happened, right? It never passed through her hands. And Akiva wasn't even getting resumes. Forget about that. For these two people to wind up with each other was Kikriyas Yamsuf. And young Rachel understands that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to perform miracles like this for us, then we must accomplish something great together. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you a marriage, He's given you a blessing. And if He's given you a blessing, then you must do something great with it. But to do something great, you must first make sure that it is in tip-top shape. So in review, if you want to build your shalom bayis, make sure that you always look through the window of the other. And make sure to every once in a while, clean your own windows. In those moments of failure, do not allow the failure to define the totality of the marital relationship. But even in the moments of failure, look at the things and remember the good as well. If you want a meaningful marriage, don't wait for your spouse to become better. Work on yourself. Identify the things that are holding you back. Identify the things that have compromised your identity. Time to take out the skeletons and the demons from the closet. Face them, vanquish them, and move on from them. Never be afraid to start again. No matter what marital setbacks a person faces, pretty much nothing is worse than Adam and Chava. And Adam and Chava were able to rebound from so many dramatic things. That marital strength is part of our DNA as well. And lastly, never forget the blessing of your bashert. Never forget the blessing of being in a marriage. And even if it's not perfect, and even if you don't see eye to eye, and even if it's not the storybook marriage, that's okay. It's a bracha, it's a blessing, it's a miracle nevertheless. And if you have that blessing, use it to make it the best marriage it could be. Use it as the springboard to make yourself the best person you could be. Use it as the platform to accomplish something great in life. Thank you, and a good luck.